I'd like to introduce you.
Oh, okay. Good.
We good?
Yeah.
And,
he's getting ready to start, you guys. Okay.
All right, we're going to go ahead and get rolling. Thanks for everyone coming out to the Microsoft Innovation Center here at one of our first inaugural meetups that we'll be holding here in this facility. And we have Greg. He joins us from San Diego, from Stacky. And he's going to share with us a little bit about his product. And we are filming, so ask good questions. So interrupt him, try and throw him off. We're live right now on Twitter.
Yeah.
And then we'll post it on YouTube. You know, we'll put the gag reel on YouTube later on.
Don't worry, I'll give you plenty of material for that.
So I'm Ian. I'm one of the tech evangelists here in Atlanta. We hold developer office hours from 10 to 3, Tuesday, Wednesdays, and Thursdays here at the building. I'm here on Tuesdays. I just kind of hang out. Today, I was like, oh, nobody's going to come and hang out with me, so I'm going to invite a bunch of VR guys out. And we moved everything around and set up VR goggles and mocap, doing animation and stuff. It was crazy, and then everybody decided to come and hang out today too, so it was a good day. So it gets busy here during the week, so if you want to come and hang out, feel free. But without further ado, I'll turn it over to Greg, and let's go.
Cool, thank you. Mm-hmm. All right, so we're going to do this in two parts today. I'm going to kind of set the table for David. And so, which actually metaphorically works out real well, because Stacky is about bringing up a bunch of machines from ground zero to ping and a prompt. And then from there, you know, we do the handoff to, you know, what people want to do in the DevOps layer and then what they want to do up in the applications layer. So, again, this is all, you know, marketing speak there. So, I mean, really the goal of Stacky is to bring systems up to a ping and a prompt, meaning if you have virtual machines or if you have physical machines, obviously this is much more relevant than the physical machine, but if you have both or one or the other, it works just fine. Just as long as the machine, if it's on the virtual side, just as long as it smells and looks just like bare metal, then we're good to go. Okay, so I want to give a little bit of context of where Stacky lives on, you know, if you're talking about a full stack. And then I'm going to go through and actually do an installation of a front-end machine and then do an installation of a couple back-end machines. Because I found that, I've done a couple of these meetups, and I found that that is actually the most helpful to the group. So I actually show you rather than just kill you guys by PowerPoint. But I want to give you a little bit of context before we do that. So here's how we view the entire stack. We're down here at the bottom layer where Stacky lives. So we've got a box here that says OS, and that's really just to represent that this is a bare metal installer. We're going to install every single RPM onto the system. Disconfig, we can configure hardware disk array controllers. We can do mega rated LSI controllers, and we can do HP smart array controllers. So we can do that during the installation phase, so you can do every single drive. So after you get your disk array controllers configured, you have a bunch of logical units. Next thing you want to do there is you want to configure the disk partitions on those logical units. We do that as well. The network box represents the fact that we can configure multiple networks or, you know, single network, different types of networks. We can bond them, we can VLAN, we can bridge them, we can do a combination of those. And then the last box there, DHCP, DNS, TFTP, there's some services we need to run on the front-end system, which the front-end is the one which is used to orchestrate the installation of all the back-end. So we need a couple services there in order to support that. So this is the basic architecture of stacking. This is the simplest one. We can handle much more complex configurations, but this is the bare minimum. So really the point here is we have one system here which is called the front end. Again, this is the one that's going to do the orchestration of the installation and configuration of the many, 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 many back-end nodes. So what we assume is you have a network connection that goes into a switch and all the back-end nodes are also connected to that same switch. We have to be able to pass DHCP messages back and forth and, you know, SSH just so we can contact them. So the front end and control this. All right, so this is the basic overview. What I'm going to do now is I'm going to run through an installation of a front-end system. I have VirtualBox on my laptop, and I'm going to start this. So what this is it's booting ISO that you can download from our website. What's included inside the ISO is a stripped-down version of CentOS and then what we call the Stacky palette. So that's our secret sauce on how to do all the installation and configure backend nodes. That secret sauce we've been working on for about 16 years now. So if you go back to 2000, myself, our CTO, and then the third guy who's still at the San Diego Supercomputer Center, we started an open source project called ROCKS, and the goal there was to help people build high-performance computing systems. So we did that for 10 years, and then myself and the CTO said, hey, let's see if we can take what we've done in high-performance computing and take it into the commercial space. You know, hey, how hard can it be to go make some money? And I have lots and lots of stories about how that is actually extremely difficult. But and I've been doing that for the last 5 years. But the point is the core that what I'm showing you today is about 16 years old. So that's at its heart. Okay, so we booted the ISO that you download. And again, this is going to look just the same on physical machines as well. And so what we do is we have a veneer that goes in front of the CentOS installer. The CentOS installer will ask you all sorts of types of questions. A lot of them don't apply to stacking. So what we're trying to do is we're trying to simplify the installation. We're trying to get you up and running as fast as possible. So here, we're just going to pick the time zone. And since I'm in LA, we're in New York here?
Yeah.
Cool. So close enough.
So we'll make it more.
It probes all the different network devices. So if you have multiple networks here connected to on your front end system, it gives you the choice to which one of those networks is the one that's going to be connected to the switch, which is connected to all the back end nodes that we're going to do the installation of. We call that the private network. So I'm going to do ETH0, pick an IP address. That's good. Net mask.
No problem for you.
Thank you. Partitioning for the front end system. Automated, we're gonna find the first drive. We'll have a root partition, a var, a swap, and then the remainder we call export. Or you can go in a manual and you can do all the other stuff. I'm gonna be lazy and I'm just gonna select automated. Here's the two pallets that we have that's located on the ISO image that we booted. A pallet is the metaphor we use to break up an entire software stack. And so here again, we're just trying to keep it nice and simple. So OS, this is a slimmed down version of CentOS 6.6. And then Stacky has the RPMs and configuration scripts that we've been working on for, you know, that 16 years. I'm gonna select both those. We get a summary screen, we look at this and say, hey, everything looks great. And so we click install, so now we're off. And so what's happening now is it took the answers that you put in through those, you know, various screens, saves them as key value pairs, which we call attributes, uses those attributes, and it actually builds a kickstart file in the background. And so we do a couple of detours during the Red Hat installation in order to be able to, you know, support our bare metal installs. And so as we like do some of these little detours, one of them is we start the installation and then we create the kickstart. We do a little detour and we create a kickstart file just for the front end and then we hand it off back to Red Hat and then it goes. And so hopefully this is going to start going a little bit. I'm getting a little nervous about this even already. Because it shouldn't be waiting this long. But while I'm waiting.
I'll kind of put the photo on the side here and see if we can continue the installation.
Yeah. So while it's hopefully doing its thing, so here's just some screenshots about what we went through. Again, you're going to get the ISO from our website. It's about 1.2 gigs. Comes up splash screen. We actually ran through all this stuff. All this config screen. So after the front end comes up, hopefully, we have a couple services that we configured, HTTP, TFTP, maybe is optional. And then we have, we also set up SSH key management. So on that password that you typed in for root, we're gonna create a root password key for your public and private. We can put the public key on all of the backend nodes. So there the idea, and also we provide a parallel execution shell. So we get you up to SSH running on all the backend nodes. The public key for root has been distributed. And so then with a parallel execution shell, you can start to load those systems with the software that you want. There was a feature from a certain company that said, we don't necessarily want our public key on all the backend nodes. So in the version following that request from a certain user of Stacky, we make it optional now if we want to put the public key out or not, which is all controlled via an attribute. Where we drew the line was, this is going to sound ridiculous, but it's like, how can we put together a software stack that is least offensive to most people? Right? Because if we were to put Puppet in, then if somebody's a chef's shop, then it's going to be offensive to them. If we put in Ansible, then it's going to be offensive to the Puppet guys. So we said, okay, we're not even going to put a DevOps layer in. So what we're going to do is we're going to do SSH. And then it came down to, all right, what systems can we, or when the backend node is up and running, what's actually relevant, right? And so we said, should we just configure the boot disk and let them do all the other drives? We're like, no, because these guys are building, data systems or, Hadoop systems, they want all of those drives configured. So we said, all right, look, that's in. And so it was kind of that tug of war about what goes in and what goes out. So, but then also you got the ability with the Stacky framework, which I think David's going to go into a little bit later. You can use the Stacky framework in order to deploy your DevOps layer and or your application as well. Okay, so after the front end's up and running, next thing you want to do is you want to describe the backend nodes that are going to be managed by the front end. So we came up with a spreadsheet metaphor. And the reason why we did this is when we went in on the commercial side of things, when we went in and we were selling the software, we get into the account, get the front end up and running, and then we see these guys, they all have these big spreadsheets on their system. And where they got the spreadsheets were, they would go to whatever vendor, Dell, HP, IBM, Cisco, and they'd say, we want 500 nodes. And so they say, okay, so the vendor would actually send them a spreadsheet that says, here's all the nodes we're shipping you. Here's the serial numbers, here's the MAC addresses, here's the interfaces, here's the, make model. And so they'd use that as a template, and then from there they would say, okay, these are going to be the names of all those nodes, these are going to be the IP addresses associated with it. So we saw that a couple times, and we go, hey, we think we can actually automate what we'd like to call it the last mile, because they would come up with this spreadsheet, and either they would hand it off to somebody else who would like look at this and say, okay, now I'm going to coax this entire system into being based on this description that came through. Or, they go and they do it themselves. And so what I called that spreadsheet was like, this was a story about what we wanted the cluster to look like. When we said, hey, if they can live inside of our, schema and of what hosts will be configured, what's the name, what's the appliance type, what's the physical location, what's the IP, what's the MAC, what's the interface associated with it, if they can live inside this simple interface, Then we can take that, save it as a CSV, import it into the front end, and then just power all the nodes up and you're up and running. So rather than this being a story about what you want your cluster to be, this is the trigger. And the good part is that since we're importing it into the program, we do a whole bunch of error checking. Are the duplicate MAC addresses, duplicate IPs, duplicate names? Does that appliance even exist? This appliance type? Does this network exist? So we go through and we do lots and lots of error checking, both either just on the individual line and globally. And then we can say, hey, there at line 45, you got a duplicate IP address that's, you know, the same on line 15. So you go fix it in the spreadsheet, re-import it, and then once you get a clean thing, then it's literally as easy as just turning all the nodes on.
I don't put it up.
Yeah.
All right. So I am going to do it.
Okay, so I've already built a CSV file, which is describing two backend nodes, you know, what appliance are they, where's the location, IP, MAC address, so on.
So I'm just going to copy this into the, that's from the previous version.
So I'm just going to copy that over. SSH is going to be pretty slow here because it's doing a DNS lookup and I don't have access to the outside world. So it's going to say after that, that's enough. Know about one host right now, which is ourselves, the front end. So we're going to run one command here, stack, load, host file equals CSV. So it runs through, does some error checking, and after it does the error checking, it imports all that data into a local database. If we listen to the host now we have the front end plus two backend nodes, which is the appliance type.
So the next thing is stack set host boot action backend
action equals install. So what this says is for every appliance type or every host name of the backend appliance, set the action to installation, which means the next time either one of these backend nodes comes in and does a fix agreement, the front end is going to instruct it to go install itself. We give an installation kernel, installation RAM disk, and then from there, that's the Red Hat installer with our little, you know, little U-turns and stuff in it in order to be able to take advantage of the information that we know inside of the database. And so then it'll go off and it'll just go through, you know, essentially what's the standard Red Hat install. So after that is set, so NAS is configuring TFTP and DHCP in order to serve out the installation kernel and all the kernel parameters required
for the Red Hat install. This should actually be a little quicker. So the boot order for the backend nodes is Pixie first, and then Artemis second. So these are the two nodes that we just powered on. And these two nodes, we took the information from that CSV, imported it into the front end, told it to go into the install mode. And you'll see these two machines are starting to go installed and being configured from that front end that we just built. So again, it is just this simple. You create and save your host configuration file. One command to load it into the database. One command to set all those backend nodes into install mode. And you power them up. So again, this is the same procedure you're going to do for virtual machines. Same procedure you're going to do for physical machines. The reason why, so this will work with, you know, two nodes that we're doing right now, or also work with 2,000 nodes, and the reason why is we've done some tricks inside, again, this is some of the modifications we've made to the Red Hat installer, is in order to bring up lots of nodes, or if you're going to install lots of nodes at the same time, they're going to ask for about 2 gigabytes of RPM data. And if you have your repositories on your front end, and if you have hundreds of nodes that are going concurrently to that front end, it's quickly going to become a bottleneck. So what we did is we stole a play out of the BitTorrent playbook, where when a node is going through the install phase, it sends a small message to the front end that says, hey, I need a package. Let's just say I need a kernel package. And so if this is the first machine installing, the front end, you know, is keeping track of information and it says, hey, nobody else is installed. I have the repository for, you know, I'm the canonical repository for the entire system. So I'm going to send a small message back to that machine and say, I, the front end, have that package. And so the installing node says, great, so it goes to the front end, pulls the kernel package. If there's another machine installing at roughly the same time as that first machine, it too is going to send a small message to the front end that says, hey, I want the kernel package, and the front end will say, oh, this other backend node has it, and so do I. So it'll send those two IP addresses back to the installing node. That installing node will look at the list and it'll try and contact the previously installing node. And if it can, it's going to pull the kernel package from it. But if it can't pull the kernel package from that installing node, it'll go back to the front end and pull it. Once it pulls it, it sends another small message to the front end. Now the front end knows that both those nodes have the kernel package. When the third one comes up, you get a list of these two plus the front end and see how this goes. So one data point we got from, we helped PayPal put together their infrastructure as well. And so they built out 3,000 nodes over three data centers, so each front end is running roughly 1,000 nodes. And so as they were going through the build process, we asked them, you know, hey, how's it going? And they said they had 6 racks of gear, which was a total of 288 nodes during, you know, when we asked them. And they said that they could go from running Hadoop all the way down, all the way through installation, all the way back up to running Hadoop in 14 minutes. And the fun story about that is that the reason why we got into PayPal is because eBay and PayPal were together and then they split apart. And as they split apart, you know, eBay held on to like 10,000 nodes and PayPal got 3,000 nodes. They all were running the same version of Hadoop, but all the installation and provisioning tools stayed with eBay. And so the guys had to start over. And so it was good timing that we ran into these guys at a conference. And they said, yeah, we're trying to figure out what we're going to do. And we said, hey, we think we can help. And so we got the one stacking in there, using that to do Hortonworks. And Big Brother, who's been working on, who had their provisioning tool they've been working on for about 5 years, those same 288 nodes took them an hour. And, oh, I'm sorry, it took them an hour to do one rack versus 15 minutes to do six. So it's kind of nice when Little Brother can show Big Brother, by doing a 44x improvement. So this is one trick that we do in order to be able to do the installation of many nodes.
Are the backend nodes up?
Okay, so the two backend nodes are up and running. I think I'm probably going to stop there because I really showed you guys what I wanted to show you. Like, how do you go from bare metal? Like, bare metal, like, there's no orchestration nodes, so there's no front end, there's no back end. So I showed how to go from there to get you up to a ping and a prompt. Those nodes are the ping and a prompt. And really, the customization here, I mean, I think that's really where David and the Salesforce guys will be able to really say, all right, once we got the ping and a prompt, this is how we utilize stacking in order to go for the layer two and up into layer three. So I think I'll hand out to you now.
I have a question for you.
Yeah, go.
How long does it take without your product to do what your product does?
Days and months and years. it's hard to say. It's hard to say.
So you haven't put a price time you versus the way it's done now?
Well, I mean, there's everybody has their own strategy.
Yeah.
And the advice that I like to give is don't do it yourself. Because it seems easy in the beginning, but it isn't.
Okay.
And so, because it could take you months or years in order to develop something that will do, just simple provisioning in order to get your application up and running. And then you get a whole new set of hosts with different network types, different number of disk drives, and it's just this ongoing treadmill that is extremely hard to keep up with.
Okay.
And we've been doing this for such a long time, we've got a lot of tips and tricks in order to be able to incorporate, heterogeneous gear, which everybody has. You may not have heterogeneous gear on day one, but you will soon have heterogeneous gear. Yeah, we know how to deal with that.
Okay.
With one description.
Okay.
Yeah.
I have a quick question.
Yeah.
So my front end has 8 disks and I'm in the RAID controller. Should I set up the boot part as on a RAID or
that's
so replaceable? And if I install, would I do this within that processor later on?
Are you getting that part
later?
Yes.
Are you getting the switch away? Yeah, we're happy to use the switch. I see that about the other.
So I don't know if this answers your question or not, but I'll dive in there real quick. So once we came up with the metaphor of the spreadsheet for host config, then it's like, oh, okay, we got a hammer, so then everything started looking like a nail. So we said, hey, let's use the spreadsheet also to be able to configure disk arrays.
Okay.
So in this case, we have like 3 different scopes, global, appliance, right here it says backend, or specific node. And so this one, is very, very complex. And you can say, all right, I want my first 2 drives, I want them to be array 1, and then if I do array ID 1, I know it's going to come up as SDA. Array ID 2, I know it's going to be SDB, this is array 5 of a hot spare. This one's got, my boot disk is going to be built out of the disk in slot 0 and the slot 15 to be array 1.
Okay. Here's SDB. That's for the back end, right?
This is all back end nodes, yes.
Okay, and then the front end? Is there something?
The front end, if you're going to, you would need to manually configure.
You have to do this first and then before you boot the screen.
Right.
Okay.
Right.
Okay, thanks.
Yeah.
I'm not a demo, but I'm actually...
All right. Thank you, Derek, for buying me out here. I'm David Peterson from Salesforce, the lead systems engineer. I did bring my entourage. I did not pay them. So you were asking. They do come for free food, though. So they did not come for me. They came for free food.
Nonsense.
So anyway, so obviously we use Stacking, so that's why I am here. I'm going to, there's some parts that are heavy, or I'm going to pretty much go deep into very specifically how Salesforce is using Stacking. So at any time, if you need any clarification, or if you don't understand something, just please stop me and I'll try to explain as best as I can. I want this to be kind of informal. All right, so this is kind of a real quick agenda of what I'm going to be talking about. I'm talking about like why Stacky, why do we pick Stacky. We're going to go through what the hardware revision requirements that we have and how we use Stacky to meet those requirements. Then we'll talk about actual specific Stacky configuration and how we used it to integrate our Chef integration stuff. So we basically, not only do we stand up a server, but we also apply all our Chef rules so that when a server comes up, all our very specific Chef stuff, like our LDAP authentication, all our base roles are automatically applied so that when the server is provisioned, pretty much we don't have to do a whole lot. It's already configured all the way, almost to the application layer. We're still working on that. We'll be able to get to a point pretty soon we'll be able to actually provision server all the way up to the application layer using the Chef and Stacky integration. Then we're going to talk about ZFS and data safe reprovisioning. So we use ZFS, so file system, across the board. And using that with a combination of Stacky, we're able to install a new version of CentOS or patch an actual specific server, reprovision it, and actually have that server come up with the data still intact. So it allows us to, if we want to upgrade our database servers with like CentOS, you know, 6.7, 6.8, or 7.0, or whatever, then we can do that without fear of losing all the data or having to wipe and start fresh. And then we're going to talk about detecting issues and kind of ad hoc reporting that we had to use. Obviously, when you're provisioning thousands of servers, you're going to run into issues, and you got to know how to detect those and how to report on those. What did you say?
Oh, yes, you will.
All right, so why Stacky? So, kind of like when I went through, like managing thousands of servers really easy with Stacky. So using the spreadsheet, I'm a big fan of that. We use that constantly to manage all our multiple data center servers. So having a spreadsheet where you can actually apply, filtering rules and stuff like that for reporting purposes, in addition to being your source of truth, is a big win for us. You just can't manage thousands of servers, on a napkin, obviously. Obviously, a big one for us when we were looking, we run HP servers. So we get racks of servers, and they're completely configured wrong from the RAID controller support. So I did not want to have to manually go through each individual server and reconfigure all the RAID stuff. So having Stacky have built-in HP RAID controller support and LUNs and stuff was a huge win for us, because we want to automate pretty much the entire process. Another thing was easy out-of-the-box provisioning. So obviously, like the RAID showed, it's really easy to provision just a simple basic server. But with Salesforce, we have a lot of customizations, a lot of needs. So having the ability to be simple, but also have a deep level of customization was a big selling point for me as well. I already mentioned it, but the ability to reprovision without losing data it wasn't a main point, but the fact that it was kind of like the icing on the cake, the fact that we were able to do that, because we run a lot of database shards.
that hold a ton of data. We have shards with terabytes of data. This was a huge selling point as well for us. Easy networks, subnet configuration. So we have a spreadsheet as well where we maintain hundreds of our networks and VLAN information. And having that in a spreadsheet and be able to assign networks right in the host configuration, assign a network right to a host and have a very specific gateway for each VLAN was another selling point. Greg didn't mention it, but also Stacky has built-in Yum repo support, so your Stacky installation can be your Yum repository. We actually use Stacky for all our internal Yum stuff, so it just kind of made sense to actually continue to use that type of feature within Stacky, and it gives us kind of granular. We didn't want to use another type of application, so we didn't want to maintain, you know, running our own Yum repo server, so having Stacky kind of have that support built in was another win, because the less stuff that we have to manage in different systems is a big thing. Another thing is it's all command line driven, which is huge. Big command line component, I hate GUIs, except for a couple different things, but the fact that this is fully command line was another win for us, because we can do automation later on down the road when we want to kind of integrate this into kind of a DevOps type of thing where we want maybe at some point we might have, more forbid, developers, you know, want to spin up a server all on their own and have integration with that, and you know, we have that kind of capability. It's all command line driven. And then the next thing, I never told Greg this, but when I was first looking at using Stacky's main line of support is Google Groups. And I almost signed up through, signed up on their Google Groups with my Salesforce email address, but I decided to use my personal email address because I didn't want them, you know, having responsive support because they see my Salesforce name. So I actually did it under my personal email account and just asked a bunch of questions. We were having a couple issues and just to see what kind of, you know, support I would get, them not knowing where I was from or whatever. So I'm happy to report that my first support request came, I think they responded within about 4 to 6 hours, which is actually really good for an open source product, so kudos. So you tell your support team that you did a good job, and they continue to help, and then of course, then after about a week, then I dropped the bomb now from Salesforce.
Hold the next airplane.
And then immediately he came over. So.
And I would be on the next airplane. Any of you, call me, I'll come. I will help you install.
Yeah. So anyway, so for that, I mean, when you deal with open source, I mean, that's a big thing, right? I mean, we're Salesforce. We're dealing with a lot of servers, so having a kind of a team, a support team, when we do run into issues to help us, it's one thing if you're provisioning a couple servers or you're a small company or whatever, but when you're a big company and you need that backing, it's really important that you get that support. So that was a huge deal for me. All right, hardware provisioning requirements. So we're Salesforce, which means security is our number one pretty much mantra. So we have the fortunate or unfortunate requirement where everything is blocked. Everything is closed, both ways, ingress and egress. So there's nothing open. We have to poke each individual hole, UDP, TCP, for all this to work. So here's for reference, exactly for Stacky to work to provision our servers, we had to open up these ports, so boot PC, boot PS, which is your DHCP protocols, UDP 6768. We had to open up UDP 69, which is TFTP, so it could pull down the images. We also had to open up the TFTP ephemeral UDP because the way TFTP works, it actually doesn't communicate directly over 69 after the communication finishes. It actually picks a random ephemeral port after the client connects the server. So we actually had to open up the ephemeral port range for it to work as well. And then the last is the HTTP and HTTPS ports for the client nodes to communicate back to the front end for certain actions that we'll go in a little bit later, you can see. So those are what we have to, just for reference, if you're locking down you have a really locked down network, then you're going to have to make sure that those ports are open. Single SKU, so we run a single SKU hardware, so we actually have one type of hardware across all our servers. And this very specific hardware looks like this. We have, in this single SKU server, we have 4 2-terabyte SATA disks, and then we have 2 400-gig SSD drives. And this is the very specific RAID configuration that we need. So we need to configure the 4 SATA disk drives in a RAID 10 LUN and actually slice it up into 2 different LUNs. One LUN is a 200-gig LUN, which is where all the operating system stuff, your root partition, swap, all that stuff is going to go on there. And then the remaining LUN is the remaining disk space after that. It's about 7.7 terabytes. That's actually going to be used for all our data stuff, our ZFS, which we'll get in a little bit later. And then the 2 400-gig SSD disks is actually in a RAID 0. And that's going to be just one RAID LUN, 960-gig LUN. So, not to go on a different rant, it's a totally different presentation, but we had to do this particular setup. You might be looking at the RAID 0, like, why are we doing RAID 0? Well, we actually run all our highly transactional MySQL servers on this very specific config, and we actually run ZFS, and there's specific configurations for that, and in order to get the performance that we needed, we had to run RAID 0 on the actual specific SSD disk. We actually use that as a caching layer for our MySQL database servers.
Okay, well, this can, that you're downplaying the first SDA and SDB.
Yep.
Because that config is 4 drives. It's a slice off the top 4 drives, and then SSD is the second half, or you know, the remainder of those 4 drives. So it's 2 RAID 10s over the same set of drives, but the drives are split.
Right.
Yep. Which at the time our solutions didn't support that. And so, but because again of you guys and having that request, is we added another column to our disk array config that's an options field. And so there's an option you can throw that says, okay, we can slice up physical drives and do 2 RAID 10s across those. And so because of you guys, it opened our eyes and like, okay, this is probably a feature that you know other people are going to want, which is actually true because I was on so Verizon's building out some machines, some HP machines with the use of Cassandra using Stacky, and they needed that field as well in order to do what they want.
Yep.
So that's a tricky part of it.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, this is just at the actual HP RAID controller level. Here's our actual partition setup, how we are partitioning these actual ones. So the SDA partition, which is the RAID 10, where we got 4 different partitions. We got the boot, which is just the 500 meg partition, and we have swap, 5 gigs, and then we have the root, which is the remaining disk space of that 1 200-gig LUN, which is where all the OS stuff is. And then for the second one, which is the same RAID 10 LUN, but it's the other slice of that, we actually don't create any partition on that. And at the time, I don't know if you've added that or not, but at the time, Stacky did not support creating a partition without formatting it. I don't know if that's still the case or not, but at the time, it was not supported, but we needed, because of how we were using ZFS, we didn't want any partitions created. We just needed to be an empty partition. And then SDC, which is our SSD drive partition, we're actually partitioning it 2 partitions, but again, not formatted because of the way ZFS works. ZFS is its own file system. We didn't need to be formatted, so we need to create a partition without the formatting. And so this is kind of how every single one of our servers looks like that we use Stacky to configure. Another requirement was we had to use the latest kernel. So we don't use the stock kernel that comes with CentOS. A lot of that is based off of performance requirements that we needed, as well as performance of ZFS. ZFS does not perform well on the stock C16 kernel. So we need Stacky to install the latest long-term supported kernel 3.10 and also install our ZFS packages.
Where'd you guys get the kernel?
Go ahead.
Where do you get the kernel on Vim from?
It's an EL, it's listed for me as ELrepo.org or something like that.
Okay,
I've got it listed. So another requirement was we wanted to have Chef integrated into our provisioning process. We did not want to provision a server, get it up to a random prompt, and have to manually log in with the same password, get Chef installed, then run Chef, apply the rules, et cetera, et cetera. So we wanted to have Chef integrated where Stacky installs Chef, installs all the appropriate configurations, all your keys to make Chef run, and all the necessary information for Stacky to be able to run Chef client the first time to apply all the base rules that we have. So that was another requirement for us, because obviously when you're in the thousands of servers range, you have no time to, you know, to manually log into any host. It all needs to be automated. All right, so let's get into actually all this specific Stacky configuration. So, first thing, actually this was discovered a little bit later, that we ran into in provisioning hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of servers, was there's actually a concurrent kickstart limitation that Stacky implements. And I tell you about this, but here you go. So, in this particular Stacky specific CGI file, there's actually says right here, it uses a semaphore to restrict the number of concurrent kickstart file generators. And basically what Stacky does is just uses the number of CPUs in your front-end server, and that's however many servers you can provision at one time. So we'd like to see this configurable in a stable.
Is that a comment from the code?
Yeah, that's a comment from the code. So
$10 I wrote that. God dang it.
So anyway,
I'm gonna go through the log and find out who wrote that. Hopefully I can do somebody else shit. But,
all right. So anyway, So what we found is we needed to bump it up because we were running into having all these servers not be able to provision because they're hitting this error. And Stacky was like, oh, I can't provision you because I've got more than 40 going on at the same time. So we actually had to up the, it's in var temp, it's a kickstart.semaphore file, and we just need to put 200 in there.
And that's totally good?
Yes, that works.
Great. I mean, I know that code would work, but I'm like, you can do 200 at a time, generates all the kickstart files and everybody's home in New York.
Yes.
Great. All right.
Yep. So, easy to fix, a little bit harder to figure out at first, but. So you can set this to whatever number you want to, but we were provisioning a couple hundred at the same time, not more probably. So definitely provisioning that many servers is something that we ran into. Alright, so real quick, custom RAID controller setup. So like Rick said, at the time when we had our very specific RAID controller set up, Stacky out of the box didn't support that. But once again, because Stacky is highly configurable, we were able to get around that by just making some XML configuration changes. So here is kind of the path. Whenever you set up Stacky, it always creates a root partition export Stacky, and everything in that export Stacky is all your configuration stuff, RPMs, everything. And all your very specific configurations that you edit, whatever, is in the site profiles. Prod is the distribution that you can create within Stacky. You can create a prod one, you can have a dev one, so you can have Stacky provision dev host and prod host at the same time. So prod, two other nodes, and then this is actual file. So Stacky works in the sense where Stacky by default has, so if you look at this storage-controller-client.xml, Stacky has a base configuration like that, and when we put replace dot storage, when we put the word replace in front of any of these XML configuration files, that tells Stacky that you won't, you're not extending that configuration, you're completely replacing whatever is in that configuration by default of Stacky. So we're actually replacing the storage controller configuration that Stacky has, and we're building basically our own. So this is what it looks like. It's an XML configuration file with some Kickstart stuff in there, but and with a little bit of Python regex. But basically what we're, here's the important stuff. Because it loads, Stacky loads the HP Raven controller command line tool by default, we're able to actually call, run this actual HP command. And these commands basically do everything that we need to do as far as configuring all the runs. So we're creating, we're basically deleting everything that's set up on the HP right now. Because when we're given the servers, there's runs already created that we don't want. So basically this line says just delete everything, and then these lines saying create, you know, array 10, size 200 gigs. The next one basically is creating another array 10 with the same disk, so it's just using the remaining disk space. And then this one is, this command is running the actual RAID 0 against the our SSD guys. So, and then obviously, here we're saying if new controller is an attribute. So Graham was talking about attributes built into Stacky. So new controller is an attribute that's assigned to every single host. And what new controller means is if new controller is set to true and that host is being provisioned by Stacky, Stacky will nuke the controller. It will nuke everything that's on that controller. If new controller equals false, then it's not even touch the controller. So whatever is already configured on there, it's going to use. So basically what we're saying, we're basically doing an if statement, is if new controller equals true, which means we want to delete everything on there, then run these commands. And then this is something that's required by Stacky. We're basically, after it finishes, then Stacky sends a request back to the front end saying, okay, it's already finished, set new controller back to false. We don't want that true attribute to stay true after it finishes, obviously, or else that would be bad.
Why is this e-byte tag on the bottom but not on the top? It says,
it's right here. It's right here.
Yeah, and it doesn't need to be on the top part of the comment?
Mm-hmm. No, it's just very specific to this command right here that the stack is running.
Oh, okay.
Oh, is that because you have the host name in there?
No, the difference there is if there's an e-balance, that means run that section on the front end itself. If there's not an eval there, then that means run that section on the installing node.
Oh, I see. Okay. I understand. Okay.
Not the best tag we could have picked, but...
So eva means front end, and otherwise it's back end.
Yes.
And the pre is just like to say this is native code now.
Well, the pre section is run this code before you install packages.
Oh, that's a pre.
Actually, run this code before you even run into this.
Oh, okay.
So, it's just a different, yeah. So there's the pre stage, which is before the disk is even touched. And then after the pre stage, it'll do all the formatting of the disk drives. Then it's the install the packages section, and then it's run the host.
Okay.
That's the timeline.
Thanks.
More questions? So I put this in here. I'm actually going to talk about it a little bit later on. I just put it in here just for reference. We use appliance types really heavily to determine the type of server, and then we have some very specific rules that we run based off the type of server. So real quickly, this is just an example. We actually don't use this per se. We might down the road. But let's just say you have two types of servers. You have a database server and then maybe a web server. And your database server has a very specific configuration you want for the drives. But your web server, you want a different RAID controller setup. So in here, we have a condition statement saying appliance in RabbitMQ. So all this is saying is if the appliance name of that server is RabbitMQ, it could be anything, whatever, then run this thing. And we can have many, of these condition statements, condition appliance in RabbitMQ, condition appliance in Apache, condition appliance in MySQL, and we can have all these different, very specific commands for that server type run. So instead of having like just an all or nothing configuration, you can actually be real, you can get real granular with it based on your servers. Here's another thing that we do. So this is in the extend backend.xml. So whenever you set up Stacky, you're going to have, I don't think that actually gets created by default, I don't think so, but whenever you do extend, that means that you're not overriding what Stacky has in there, you're actually extending the functionality of that configuration. So in here, we have bootloader post, which means not during installation, but after the server has been provisioned and it comes back up. So the first boot, we are actually running these HP rate controller cache settings. Again, what we're doing is we're making sure, because when we get these servers, their rate controller configuration are not set to the way that we need them to. So after the server has been provisioned, it reboots, it's coming back up. Stacky runs these commands, and basically what we're saying is make sure that the HP rate controller array accelerator, the cache settings are enabled. And the other thing that we're doing is we're modifying the cache ratio. So by default, rate controllers come where it's 20% read, 80% write cache settings. Well, we actually need that flipped because of how we're running ZFS. So we run the same HP command. We're modifying the cache ratio to change that to 80-20. So this just shows how you can really get granular with how you're configuring and running various commands in the different stages of a provision process. So this runs after the server's already been provisioned and comes up the first time. Custom partitions. So again, like when I showed you the partitions, we have a lot of partitions that we needed to be partitioned but not formatted. Stacky at the time did not support that, so we had to roll our own. So this extend-partition.xml, we're just extending the configuration. So this is basically, we're actually running specific commands, and since we're doing pipes and other various things, we have to surround these commands in a CDA that's in an XML file. So basically what we're doing is running, just simply again, we're running the fdisk command, and we're creating these partitions on the fly. We're just creating the partitions, but we're not formatting them. Okay, so this shows you how you can extend the actual partition capabilities of Stacky, even when they didn't really exist at the time when we were using it. So this just shows you kind of how customizable that you can get, even if it doesn't support it necessarily from a, the configuration or from the spreadsheet standpoint. Custom appliance types. So we use appliance types with everything. So every single one of our servers has an appliance type assigned to it. So when you install Stacky, you have two appliance types created, the front end that Greg was talking about, which is the actual Stacky server itself. And then you have a back end appliance type that by default gets applied to all your servers. We took it totally further than that. We actually created an appliance, a very specific appliance type for every single one of our servers. So we have, I don't know how many we're up to, probably over 50 now, but even if we have two servers, we always create an appliance type for that. Okay, so this is kind of just an example of stackless appliance, just listing some appliance types. We use this to customize our ZFS partitions, and we're gonna use it for further Chef integration down the road. And this is kind of a couple commands to what you would use. So if you wanted to create your own customized appliance, it's real easy. We actually have this scripted. We created a script that does this for us, so we don't actually manually have to do this all the time. But it's pretty much these four commands.
Make scripts.
Yes. Scripts for scripts. We have to make scripts to automate the scripts. So we're just creating basically an appliance name called Load Balancer, and we're setting these specific attributes to that appliance type. And this, so the very simply allows you to create an unlimited appliance types. This just allows us to create, to get real granular in our configuration for all our server types. And here's an example of how we use appliance types. So in our backend extend backend configuration file, if you notice, this extend-backend XML configuration file is pretty much the main, your main configuration file that you're going to be using when you configure stacking. So real quickly, we have three different things going on here. So the first one is boot order post, which means whatever's in these tags is going to happen after the server's provision comes back up. This is a Python expression, condition appliance equals RabbitMQ. So if the appliance name of the server, RabbitMQ, is assigned to the server, that's going to be true. And then the other thing is new controller or new disk is true. So if these three conditions are true, then run that. So you can see real quickly that those are true, that what we're doing is we're actually running some ZFS commands to actually create our ZFS data pool and then create a file system. Same thing with the other one, boot order post, appliance equals Redis, new controller, new disk. So if this, these three statements are true, then it's gonna run that. So our Redis servers have this appliance name attached to it. So whenever a Redis server comes up, it's going to get these very specific ZFS file systems attached to it. Later on down the road, what we're going to do is actually have this include very specific chef roles to it as well. So whenever, we're not there yet, but once we get our roles cleaned up, we will have basically a chef line here where the chef, or specific chef Redis roles will be applied, so that when a Redis server gets reprovisioned, not only will our base roles and LDAP authentication get applied, basically Redis will get installed, come up, and everything pretty much will be hands off. Will be pretty much zero interaction that we'll have to do. Not there yet, but close. Next thing we're doing, same thing, appliance type MySQL. We're actually very specifically, we're doing all these things. You can see how crazy we're getting. We're setting some kernel parameters. We're actually modifying the grub.conf file, so we're modifying some specific kernel parameters in the grub configuration file, and then we're running all these different CFS commands specific to our MySQL server. So this shows you kind of the flexibility that Stackit gives us using appliance types. Here's kind of an example of our spreadsheet. It's very similar to what Greg shows. We use this appliance type. We're assigning all the different appliance types. Rack, we're actually using very specific rack names in here. Rank, we use this column to actually set the rack view location of the server and the actual rack itself. Stacking, we don't use it for anything other than our own basically reporting purposes. Network, and then obviously this isn't, Stacky doesn't use this, but we've added this on into our spreadsheet, the serial number of the server. And then when we have a process that we want to export this and import it, we just slice that column off. We don't want to use that column. But for our management, keeping track of all our servers, we actually added that column to make it easier.
Would it be helpful to have the serial number in the database?
Yes, it would. Because we use this for all our reporting. We use it for whenever we have to submit a ticket. So if a server has a hardware issue, then basically we copy this line, we copy that line, we copy that line, we copy that line, and we give it to our data center support people.
And so if it was inside the database of the front end, then you could just run a quick little command, do a quick cut and paste,
yep.
Save you some time.
Yep. Yeah, especially when managing thousands of servers, we have to know the server number. All right, so Chef, so Gregor talk about it. Stacky has the concept of carts, which I think is actually changing them from what I read.
No, we still got those.
Okay, all right. So basically, a cart is a collection of configurations and RPMs. So you can actually create kind of within Stacky a package of an application you want. And so we basically created a cart for Chef, where we maintain all our Chef configuration files, the Chef RPM that we want installed. So it's I don't have it on my presentation, but it's stack add cart and the name of the cart. I think it is really easy. But create this. So we created a Chef cart. Kind of here's that was a little bit heavy, but just give an example of kind of how we're integrating Chef into Stacky. So Chef has many different configuration files in order for Chef to run. I don't have it all listed here, but basically we're, on post, we're making the Chef directories. This is kind of interesting, we actually use proxy servers. So we actually have a condition statement where we have two separate Chef configurations, if it's the proxy server or if it's every other server. We don't want Chef to be using the proxy server when Chef is running on the proxy server, right? So we're basically saying here, post condition, not proxy and host name. So if the word proxy is not in the host name, then this configuration is going to be applied. So this kind of shows you the flexibility that Stacky gives us in our environment, where we kind of need to have multiple configurations depending upon the server that we need to provision. So here's kind of a Chef client config. I don't know, does anyone run Chef? Well, I know you guys. Does anyone run Chef? No? You run Chef? Okay. All right, I don't want to bore you, but kind of example of the biggest thing I want to show you is these conditional statements and how we're able to apply certain configs based off of the host name. Another thing too, just continuation. This is where we laid out some JSON configurations that Chef uses. Another thing that was interesting problem we had to figure out was Chef uses a client key pair. So how do we reprovision a server and have it come back up and still connect to Chef server and still have Chef client run? Because if you don't have that client key pair, if you nuke the client key pair, then you can't connect to Chef. So we're actually kind of using a little bit of trickery where we copy, if you notice, let's see, this one, well, this one is if not nuke disk. We have one down here. So this one down here says put or post condition nuke disk. So it's a brand new server. We assume that if nuke disk is true, then it's a brand new server. So we run the Chef client configuration. Right, it adds all the configuration, the client PIM file and stuff like that. And basically, we're copying all that configuration file to our like CFS file system. And then up here, if we're not nuking the disk, we actually copy that file back to the appropriate place so that Chef client can run again. So we use our ZFS data pool as kind of like a backup to store files before they get nuked, and then copy them back over. If that makes sense. Here's another issue that we ran into. So Stacky uses Foundation RCS packages, and it was the Foundation, the RCS stuff was kind of really screwing with our syslog configuration files, because it was creating these RCS basically backup files. The our syslog daemon was trying to load, and it was messing up our daemon, as well as some other daemons as well. So we just have to nuke it. So I'm not sure if this can be addressed, but it definitely was an issue for us that we had to get rid of completely. So real quickly, in our backend file, we're just running this. This shows you we're just removing that RPM that Stack installs, and then we're just finding all the directories with the name RCS in it, and we're just nuking them. So that was another issue that we had to kind of work around, but again, because of the flexibility of the configuration and stuff, it was an easy fix to do. But, so that was another experience that we had. Any questions before I continue? All right, TFS basic provision. So we use CFS, and because we use ZFS, we have to use the latest kernel. Here's where we're getting the latest kernel, elrepo.org, and ZFS, ZFS on Linux. So Stacky is able to pull RPMs straight from a yum repo. I'll have those commands in here, but real easy. You specify the link, or if you already have the repo in yum, you can specify the repo ID, and it pulls in all the packages into Stacky. And then real simply, I mean, this is how we're installing the kernel. I mean, we just, in the kickstart file, on the kickstart tag, extend back in. After the packages are in the Stacky yum repo, we're just specifying with the package tag, kernel, LT headers, and then we're specifying the ZFS package, and Stacky automatically installs the kernel. Installs the kernel, but it doesn't actually enable it. So whenever you install a kernel, grub gets updated, but by default, grub still points to your existing kernel. So we had to do just a basic set command to change the default variable. So in grub, there's a default where it equals in the line, the kernel line you want to boot up into. And we just had to change that to default equals one, so that the latest kernel on boot up is loaded. And then we're just adding very specific ZFS configuration variables to the ZFS config mod probe. And this just shows, you know, how pretty much you can use Stacky to configure anything and everything that you need to. So you're not manually configuring anything. You let Stacky set up all the base stuff. You know, let Chef do your application level stuff, but Stacky does all our kind of up to the application layer configuration. So here's our ZFS stuff. I want to get into the nitty-gritty. ZFS is really easy to use. We're just loading the ZFS module after it's installed. We're creating a ZFS pool, setting some parameters for ZFS. We're adding some file systems that are applied to every single server. Doesn't matter what server it is, these file systems are created off of our ZFS pool, so forth and so on. And then it creates the pool. So this, all this is basically just creating, setting up, configuring our ZFS file system on all our servers. So this right here, so Stacky has the ability, so there's two attributes that Stacky uses. You have nuke disk and nuke controller. So if nuke controller is true, that means Stacky will nuke your HP RAID controller settings, launch everything. Nuke disk, if nuke disk is true, that means Stacky will also format and delete basically all your disks, right? So what we're saying here is on post, so server's been provisioned, coming up, condition not nuke disk. So the nuke disk attribute is set to be false for this particular host. Well, we assume that if it's false, that we already have data in our ZFS pool, because Stacky hasn't formatted it, hasn't deleted it, hasn't touched it, because we told it not to. But we've also reprovisioned the server, the OS. We want to install a new OS or whatever, so you got a brand new OS provision, but the actual disk, the data is still there. So basically what this is saying is, basically load up ZFS again, but re-import our ZFS data. So basically what this allows us to do is reprovision our MySQL servers, which have terabytes of data, and say we want to, there's a new push where we need to install CentOS 6.8 or we want to go to 7.0. Well, how do you do that without, when you have 2 terabytes of, you know, of data on your shards, right? So this allows us to reprovision, patch, load up a new OS on our database servers, and actually re-import our data so that the data is not touched, ZFS comes back up, our MySQL mounts are all reloaded back up, and MySQL starts up without ever skipping a beat. So this allows us to basically reprovision without losing any data, which is a thumbs up for us, because we have lots of star servers, and when we get to the point where we need to upgrade, this is going to be a huge thing for us. So this is what allows us, basically, it's real simple, but allows us to run the ZFS commands to actually import our data pool that exists on there, but we just need to have Stacky run these commands to load it over.
Does that make sense? It only takes to repopulate that if you weren't importing it. Let's get the cache back up to the next hot level.
Well, this doesn't load the cache. This is actually the data.
Okay.
Okay. This is just the data part. Yes. I mean, it resets up the cache, but anytime you, I mean, cache is volatile, so whenever you shut down a server, this has nothing to do with provision. So if you restart the server anyways, whatever's in the ZFS cache is going to be blown away anyway. So
you could do something similar with HDFS?
Do what now?
With HDFS, could you do something similar? Because the raw data is also on the raw disk, as long as you have the metadata backed up and put on the account.
Right. Yeah, so I mean, the important thing though, the way this makes it works is these conditions right here. Being able to specify these conditions is what makes this work. You can put anything in here, but having that, be able to look for that condition, whether that's true or not, is what makes this work. All right, detecting issues and ad hoc reporting. We had 0 issues. No laughter began. So, thousands of servers, you're going to have issues. So, Stacky's great provisioning, but as far as getting the status of an existing server, it's a little bit harder. And I'm hoping after this meeting, I'll talk to Gray. We'll brainstorm how to make this better. So it's a little bit harder. Provisioning a couple servers, 100 servers, fine. But when we're provisioning hundreds of servers at the same time, it becomes a lot more challenging. There's a couple different ways at various stages in the provisioning process. So obviously, Stacky runs its own DHCP server. So by default, in var log messages, is where all your DHCP requests are going to be. So that's immediately when a server pixie boots, that's the very first place you're going to look at, is can my server even connect and contact my Stacky server? This was probably because we're a highly secure company, this was a lot of our problems. Another thing is not foolproof, but watching the new controller and new disk attributes. So basically what happens is when Stacky finishes the process of configuring your RAID, LUNs, and controller, it'll send an HTTP request back to Stacky saying, hey, I'm finished, set this attribute back to false. So if you have these, it only works if you really have these set to true. So if you have these set to true, you can technically watch these attributes, and if they stay true, you see that the server got a DHCP request. You see that it's starting, but then it hasn't modified it back to false. Then you know that there's an issue between the server coming up, TFTP booting, and then to the time when Stacky tries to actually configure your HTTP RAID controller. So maybe there's a hardware issue. We had a couple issues where our RAID controller, the actual onboard cache was faulty, and the actual tool, the HTTP RAID tool, was built into Stacky, couldn't run. So we had a couple servers caught between this state and this state, right? And watching this kind of helped figure out that, okay, it didn't even get past this point. So it didn't even get past the point where it made changes to the RAID controller. So that's another thing. And then if it gets past this stage in the provisioning process, then the next thing is tailing the var log HTTP access log. And I actually will report, whenever it's downloading RPMs, I'll actually will record and log all the RPM downloads and stuff. So if you're seeing RPM downloads in this access log, then you know it obviously got to that point where it finished the provision, it finished nuking the controller, setting up your RAID LUNs, partition, and stuff like that. So you know it's gotten to that point. And then the other thing is watching the boot action flag. So Greg mentioned this, or showed it, where whenever you want to provision a server, you have to set the boot action flag to equal to be installed, not OS. So again, when Stacky finishes the provision server, right at the tail end, it will send another HTTP request, and it will set the boot action flag back to OS, because you don't want a server, obviously, in this loop where it's trying to reinstall. So the action flag is set to install, it finishes the provisioning process, it will set that flag back to OS. So if you have a server that's been provisioning for 30 minutes, and this is still set to, the action flag is still set to install, more than likely you have an issue somewhere after it's downloaded the RPMs and when it finishes the actual provisioning process. So there might be an issue with your backend, the XML config. You might have some commands running that's looping or not finishing properly, whatever, erroring out. So if this boot action flag is still set to install after an hour, it's a good chance you have an issue. So again, like I said, like tailing log files for a couple of servers is fine, but when you're tailing the log files and you have 200 plus servers hitting these log files, like, there's no way that we can truly figure out like which server's having issues, which server's not, which server is finished. It becomes a guessing game. So it's a lot harder at our scale to figure out where the issues are. So here's just an example with a new controller, new disk. So we're doing stack list host HTTR. So we're listing, for this particular server, we're listing all the host attributes that are currently set on that specific server. And we're just grepping for any attributes with the name nuke in it. And so for Chef 1-1 server, the new controller, nuke disk, is set to true. And if it gets past that point, if these get set, you'll actually, you'll see this in the SSL access log. You'll see this being called. There's a CGI command, set DB partitions, that Stacky runs after it finishes the partition and controller. So if you actually see this in your logs, then that means Stacky successfully completed the actual RAID controller setup and the partitions. So here's an example. So it got past that point. Now we're tailing the access logs. just a basic tail command, repin or repin for one of these two IP addresses. This is kind of an example of what you're going to see in the actual log. You're going to see all these RPMs getting downloaded from your Apache log files. Then the boot action flag, like I said, stack list post boot, name of the server, or you can specify a regex, specify more than one server. So this server's installed, separate set of OS, depending upon your provisioning process. If this has been set to install for a long time, then you probably have an issue. The problem with this, though, and here's where it becomes difficult, is that whenever you're provisioning 1,000 servers, 2,000 servers, like, we'll set all our servers to install because they're all brand new servers. We want to provision every single server. But when we send a request to our data center tech, our data center technicians that are actually physically in our data center, and they reboot the nodes, we don't know how many they're rebooting. We don't know exactly the order that they're rebooting them in. So we don't really know, if this server is set to install, like, is that a valid state? Like, we don't know, right? Because our on-site data technicians might not have rebooted that server yet. But because there's so many servers happening, we have no idea if that server has been pixel booted or not without having to correct through log files, which really becomes a pain. So again, this is what you'll see in the log files when the provisioning process is actually successfully completed. Stacky will send this, will run this CGI command, set pixelboot action OS. So it'll set the action back to OS if the provisioning process is completed. So we'll sometimes prep for that. So here's the issues that we encountered. So we have many racks. We have top of rack, and we have switches on top of racks. So first issue was the IP helper address in the switches, which tells the switch where to forward DHCP requests to. And we had issues where a lot of our top of rack switches weren't configured properly because Salesforce is really big and we're not network engineers. We actually put in a request and they have to set them. So we actually ran into a lot of issues where that wasn't even set correctly. And obviously, if that's not set correctly, then pixel booting, that natural stacking server is not even going to see any DHCP requests. Another issue, because we're highly security sensitive, ACL mismatch between racks causing DHCP and TFT to be blocked. So we have ACL set up on every one of our each individual rack. And so we were having issues where some proper ACLs were not being applied. And so TFTP wasn't even working right. Another thing, misconfigured host networks causing gateways to be wrong. So we had, in our spreadsheet, we had some networks that were assigned to the wrong servers, which meant that, meant the gateways were set wrong. If the gateways are set wrong, then you can't even, the servers won't be able to contact Stacky as well. So a lot of our issues were at the first level where, are the servers even hitting Stack? So, and a lot of that came down to just, we had to monitor the actual, the var log messages configured file to see if even we were getting if Stacky was seeing a DHCP request.
So back to the top three bullets right there, those are switch configuration?
Yes, switch configuration. This was more our doing where we had, within the Stacky host spreadsheet, we had networks assigned to the wrong host. So that was more kind of us, but it also made troubleshooting a lot harder because obviously, with hosts assigned to the wrong network, these servers, when we were trying to provision them, weren't able to contact the actual Stacky server. So we automatically assumed that one of these two would play.
Yeah.
So 95% of the time, these two were the issue, but then we had also issues where this was the case, and we're like, but we didn't have really good data within Stacky or the logs to really quickly determine what are the state of things, right?
Now, do you guys have control of the switches, or is that another group?
That's another group. We don't have control.
Yeah.
What kind of data could you get to know that? So in all three cases, Stacky just never is going to like untyped. So what, other than checking those three things or similar whatever networking issues, is there something that Stacky could know or could tell you? Or?
Yeah, I mean, the thoughts that I was thinking, I haven't really talked to her about this, but if already Stacky had checks all along the way where, okay, within Stacky itself, where, okay, Stacky sees a DCP request comes in. Okay, well, Stacky, there could be an attribute that where it stores all these various stages of a provisioning process. So Stacky can be like, okay, yep, start the DCP request, start for this host, and it actually stores that within the actual Stacky database. So we have an actual audit log of what's going on. So then if we don't see any of that, then we can always assume that the absence of that
means it's a failure at that point.
Yeah. But because there's really none of that, it's just we have to do our own analysis. Makes that much harder.
But if the top rack router's not set up right, then you never even get that 260.
Yeah, we only see it.
But then the third one, it got that sent data that wouldn't let it communicate.
Yeah. So with a couple servers, no big deal, but when we power cycle 200 plus servers at the same time, and half of them don't contact the Stacky server, how do we determine that? Well, now we have to do these complex for loops to loop through every single server, which I should show, correct the log files, do a comparison. It's kind of nasty. Another issue was some ZUS commands not running properly due to hardware missing drives. That has nothing to do with Stacky, which is another issue. Obviously, the more servers you have, your failure rate, your mean time before failure goes up, so had a lot of issues with that. All right, so here's a really nice, lovely, long name.
So, get over that.
So, find all hosts that still have the install flag and generate a report. Like,
why didn't you make this a script?
So basically what we're doing here is, so we've rebooted all these hosts. Yeah, we think they're being provisioned, but the install flag is still set. It's been like 50,000 days. Yeah, what the heck's going on? So this is, we're doing two for loops within the same command. So we're basically listing all the stackless hosts. We're doing a for loop over that. So we're grabbing all the hosts that still have the install flag set.
Okay.
Then what we're doing is we're passing that host to another for loop, and we're running this command, stackless host interface, and then the actual host name. And what we're doing is we're grabbing, for all these hosts, we're grabbing the IP address for every single host. So then, after we grab the IP address for every single host that still has the install flag, we're then doing basically a cap against all these three main logs, and we're basically grepping that IP address to see, is that IP address, does that return anything in the logs for that IP address? And then we're basically, for each host has its own section that's going to be created by this report. Okay, so it creates this report by IP address, but we still have, after this report is generated, we still have to manually open up this report and actually go through and see, okay, are there any log files generated for this host? If there are no log files, if there's no DHCP messages, if there's no RPM downloads, nothing, then we can assume that there's an issue with the server trying to contact Stacky over DHCP. But we still have to go through these log files. Some servers might have a bunch of log files, but they're at various stages in the provisioning process. So overall, it's kind of a painful process, but it at least gives gets us some type of organization when we're dealing with a large amount of servers. And this is kind of what the host, this is what the report generates. It generates the host name, the IP address of that host, and then any, basically any logs generated through that host. Right, and then you can notice that for these hosts, there's no logs at all for that host. So with this one, we can see that it got the DHCP request fine. It actually started installing natural images. So we know that at least this host got past the DHCP range. So we know that we're not looking at a, you know, a firewall or a switch ACL issue, right? It's more on our end. So, but obviously, these are three servers, and when we generate this report, there are going to be 200, 300 plus servers in this report. So it's a little mundane, but we've got to do it, or we've got to do something. Here's another one. This is actually a really cool one. This actually helped us identify ACL issues within a very specific rack. So find the top racks with the most unprovisioned hosts. And help us identify racks with potential. This helped us identify racks with potential ACL issues. So obviously, if there's an ACL risk at the rack level, more than likely, none of the hosts are going to be provisioned in that rack. So here's what we do. We stack list networks. So here's kind of our format of our, these aren't our real names, but this is very similar to how we have it set up. So in stacking, these are the names of our networks. We have more than five, by the way. but this is the format. The rack name, you know, prod, VLAN number. So that's what our names, our networks look like. And then here's the command that we run to show, okay, based off of this command, I won't go through it all, you can look at it, but basically it generates this report. It looks at how many servers still haven't been provisioned and sorted by rack. So we can quickly see that, oh my gosh, rack 2 has 40 servers that still haven't been provisioned, even though we've rebooted the nodes and stuff like that. So automatically, chances are we have an ACL issue in our rack, and we can appropriately address it. So this helped us really identify, instead of kind of going all across the board and being like, okay, these two servers have an issue, these three servers have an issue, and then 5 hours later realize, oh my gosh, all these servers are in the same rack. This quickly helps us identify per rack issues, which we had a number of. So lessons learned. So with thousands of servers, you need a standard naming convention for hosts, your network names, and your appliance types, et cetera, et cetera. Always standardize. Don't name stuff one way and then halfway through your name another way. Always standardize your naming conventions for everything. A whole lot better. I don't care if you have 50 servers, how many of you show you can do that. Single SKU server saves you time and headaches. Applies to us, but using the same type of server across the board, it's a win-win. Okay, so Stacky has the configuration to configures different types of servers and stuff like that, but for Salesforce, we use a couple of different single SKU servers, but for us, it's the multiple single SKUs, but for us, it is one single SKU. We only have one type of server, and that's it across the board. So definitely a big thing, configuration, we have hardware issues, we can swap components, or boot servers, we'll have to worry about issues. We also created custom scripts to augment Stacky functionality. So Stacky, there's a lot of commands sometimes. You have to run like three commands to create this, or you have to run these three commands to provision a server. So when dealing with thousands of servers, it only made sense to create some scripts that actually automate that process as well. So to create, to prevent, you know, human error and stuff. So we actually created three scripts. We create Stack Appliance scripts. So this script actually looks through our configuration file and pulls out all our appliance names and dynamically creates all our appliance types. So if someone wants to create a new appliance type, all they have to do is add it to that configuration file and then just run this command. It automatically looks in that file. And if that appliance type doesn't exist, it automatically creates it. So That's going to help. This one, so stacking at the moment, maybe it's changed, but at least right now I don't know. Stacky doesn't allow you to import a network CSV file. So basically, we still use a spreadsheet for all our networks definitions. And then we just created a script that will take that CSV file, kind of like the host file, and import all our networks, since we have hundreds of networks. And instead of having manually one at a time, all our networks. And then the last thing, we actually created a wrapper around enabling a host. So this script actually takes a list of files. So when we want to provision, let's say we want to provision 150 servers like right now, we just populate a file with all those servers that we want provision. And then we basically point that file with this script, and it automatically does a for loop. It goes through every single host, and there's a number of different switches, so we can say, okay, enable this host to be provisioned or disable it, as well as set the new controller and the new disk attributes. So we can say, okay, make sure that all these servers are not enabled to be provisioned, disable all of them, right? So that's helped us greatly reduce kind of human error, because it is sometimes when you have three different commands and all these different switches, you sometimes will miss something, and you might enable a server to be provisioned when you did things.
But the four lanes of grep code is well good.
So other lesson learned, obviously I already went through it, but stacking by default does not allow you to have a high number of concurrent kickstart sessions. So by default, when you install Stacky, however many number of CPUs are in your Stacky server, that's how many concurrent kickstart sessions you're gonna have.
That might change.
Just like the comment tells me.
Exactly. Code is very clear.
Teach me for commenting my code.
Hey, it was commented. That's a win, right? All right, and that's it. That's all I got. So, thank you.
Thank you.
Any questions?
We're good.
Pretty cool.
Well, thank you for your
yeah.
Thanks
for coming out.
What do you think?
For
sure.
Thanks for having
me.
We're done.
We're done.